happiness.
And I was by myself. I didn't have a coach here for some odd reason.
Oh, well, now you do.
Swear to God, I have one. I don't know what I was about.
There you go.
Wow, what the hell?
Well, that was before all that happened.
Oh, wow.
You were reinventing the history.
All right, welcome everyone. Welcome. I'm sure folks might want to be interested in getting some dinner before council. If not, we can wait to start. Oh, there we go. Dinner. Boy, that quieted everybody down. Thank you for joining us today for Tuesday, April 24th, Executive Committee meeting. We have Councilwoman Kilpatrick, Councilman Sheldon, Councilman Bell, Councilman Powers, Councilman Street, Councilman Smiley, all the way at the end of the table.
Mr. Taggart's sitting there.
Oh.
Can't you tell?
Make a move. Councilman Hollins, Councilman Weiner, Councilman Cartier, Councilman Diller, and Councilman Retta. The first item on the agenda is the approval of minutes.
Motion to approve.
There's been a motion to approve and a second of the minutes of the meeting of March 27th. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? All right, the minutes are approved. We are making, in light of a guest we have with us here today, I'm not sure how long item three will take. We have a motion to go out of order to consider the schedule for August and September. Do we have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
We are on item four, council meeting scheduled for August and September. It's been brought to our attention, and I hope everybody has been circulated, the schedule and the most recent revisions to the proposed schedule. These are for two reasons. To adjust for the primary day, and the second to adjust for the highest holiday in the Jewish faith. Councilman Weiner, would you like to discuss the latter?
Thank you very much. I am not, this is not my area of expertise, so I would like to extend a lifeline to Rabbi Chutney Vogel is here, just to quickly say that County Council in my 16 years has never met on Yom Kippur under the leadership of a sponsored resolution by Karen Vineski and then by Paul Clark. We've always shifted. It would be like meeting on Christmas or Easter. This is the Day of Atonement, and it would show respect for the fact that we have a diversity of population. And with that, if I might throw it over to Rabbi Chutney Vogel to explain why, and the school districts don't meet in northern New Castle County on Yom Kippur either.
Rabbi Vogel, would you please state your name for the record?
Rabbi Chutney Vogel.
And please, if you'd briefly expand on what the Councilman Weiner was saying about the holiday.
I think Councilman Weiner just wanted to have in public that the rabbi actually agrees with him.
We know about that.
I like this guy.
He's got one. Yeah.
I've got to ask if that's a first.
In this setting, yes.
Oh, clarification, always.
But every word that he said happens to be correct. It is the holiest day of the year, and its observance is mandatory on every man, woman, and child in the Jewish faith. From someone who would jeopardize their health would not have to fast on that day. It really is the most serious and the most important day in the Jewish calendar, and therefore, if there's any consideration and respect that is accorded, is certainly appropriate. Yom Kippur starts as every Jewish holiday, and as the Sabbath, it starts the eve before, so it's a 25-hour holiday, but then there are preparations that come into this holiday. So even in the afternoon, before the eve, in Jewish tradition, in Jewish life, one would not schedule anything, because every single person is, from the least observant to the most observant, is making the necessary preparations for the holiest and the most awesome day in the Jewish calendar. I'm not going to give you all the details and the observances. Suffice it to say that it is, as Councilman Weiner stated, the most important day in the Jewish calendar.
Thank you, Rabbi. Councilman Cardi?
I just wanted to inquire with Councilman Weiner. So it's been the tradition of County Council we not meet on Yom Kippur.
Yes.
We have not in the past?
In my 16-year tenure, due to resolutions sponsored by, we went back and had Betsy research this, Karen Vineski, and then Paul Clark. We always shifted to a different day. This time it's a little more challenging because we've also got the primary day in the month as well. So Betsy's come up with a suggested one solution that we can discuss today. We wouldn't be voting on it because you're just getting it today, and it would instead, Carol's researched it to make sure it's violative of state law, which says you have to meet twice a month, doesn't say, except for August and December, doesn't say what days you have to meet. And Greg Wilson, Wendy took a quick look at it and concurred, but Greg and Wendy wanted to just do a double check for safety, and also we're just putting it out, so we didn't want to be voting on it this time until next time as well.
Thank you, Councilman. And before I call on Councilman Cartier to follow up, we do have, we've been handed out a revision. We did circulate the proposed calendar change. We just circulated a revision. If everybody has a copy, this will require, because it's not as Councilman Cartier, Councilman Weiner said, it's not a violation of state law, but we need to change our rules. If we're going to do this, I don't know if the rules were changed before, but the rules are pretty explicit currently that we have to meet the second and fourth Tuesday.
Need a spare. No, I haven't.
All right. So
this is the same one that was put in our boxes, correct?
Right, same one.
Yes.
Okay, same one we have.
Revision number one, yes, correct, Councilman. Councilman Cartier?
I'm supportive of both, of course, not meeting on the primary day and Yom Kippur. Say that I have a very flexible schedule and I can accommodate the changes as proposed to meet in September.
Thank you, Councilman Cartier. Councilman Reddit, you guys?
No, that's good.
Okay. And moving around the calendar seemed to accommodate both concerns, and since we're moving it off the 25th, rather than having back-to-back days, we could spread these meetings out so we would have them in our normal pattern of every other Tuesday, which means that we can conduct our business in a regular schedule. Any other comments, questions from members of council?
I'll just say, subject to the results of September 11th, I may still be ill on the 18th.
Yeah. Yeah. We all might.
We might be a lot different here.
Wow.
It's your world.
It's true.
Councilwoman.
Okay, so normally we had what off in August?
I could call the clerk to respond to that.
That's a garden of council. We normally met on the fourth Tuesday of August, and this is shifting it to the third Tuesday of August.
So we still have the second Tuesday off.
This just it shortens the August break a bit by coming back.
Okay.
Well, we could draw straws and just have seven come back.
As long as we have seven.
Just trying to help.
And so, yeah, so the change would be, instead of having, you know, everything on that last Tuesday, August 28th, we're having everything on Tuesday the 21st.
Okay.
August.
Okay, can I ask one more question?
Please.
Okay, so primary day and Yom Kippur are nothing. No committee meetings, no nothing. It's just off.
We've shifted to the first and the third.
So we have committee and council, but then nothing on the second and the fourth at all.
Good. Councilman Retta?
Yeah.
Vacation day for me.
Can I ask Betsy, what would be the difference in August, what we previously had compared to this? I mean,
Betsy Gardner, Park of Council, we had it on the fourth Tuesday.
Right,
everything. Now we're having everything on the third Tuesday. The fourth Tuesday will be regular committee meetings, and the first Tuesday in council will be council meetings.
But then we're going to have,
we'll be on a fairly regular schedule there on committee meetings prior to land use and special services on the 28th of August, have our council meeting with finance, and our normal meetings on the 4th. We completely skip then primary day, Tuesday the 11th, and have everything on the 18th, like we do in August, where we have all committee meetings, and we have a somewhat abbreviated schedule of committees for the 18th, because you can't get them all in that one day. This is just a suggestion, a way to...
It's fine.
Okay, I move that we accept it.
May I suggest, out of due deference to our county attorney, that we not vote on it and let him just vet it, make sure it's, as Carol Doolin concluded, it's not violative of state law. Also, I don't think we've had a week in advance to have the rules changed, and I think we should be respectful of the fact that we created our own internal rule, that we would have rules changes in writing for a full week.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend nor suggest that we vote on this week.
Vote on next committee.
Let's vote on next committee meeting. We'll have that in 2 weeks. We'll vote on it, we'll get it locked in. Very similar with some other proposed changes. There have been some tweaks. We want to make sure we're meeting FOIA requirements. It's not an emergency. Let's vote on it in 2 weeks. But so everybody has it in advance. Any other questions? County Attorney Wilson, did you have?
Greg Wilson, County Attorney, I was just going to say thanks to electronics. I've already looked up the statute, and you're only required to meet twice a month, so the days are not required, so I'm fine with that. But as Council President has pointed out, I think your rule change requires a week sometime. So.
Great, thank you very much. Thank you for attending. I know we had a couple other comments from members of the public. Sorry? I saw another. Did you wish to comment?
I'm Stephen Sachs. I'm Bob's rabbi, actually. I'm the former president of the Rabbinical Association of Delaware. So I just want to thank you all for considering this. This is tremendous. Thank you very much.
Thank you for attending. And did we have a follow-up from...
No.
From,
I never answered.
You need to take
about his rabbi? The board of assessors. Any questions?
Not that I know.
I'm good. I already know where I'm going. Okay. I got family here.
I wonder how they do confessions.
It's nice to start with that. I think we've adopted that practice. All right. Seeing nothing else on this agenda item, I'd like to move to go back to regular order, item number 3. We have a motion and a second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
We're back. Discussion of county workforce diversity report. Welcome, Ms. Pete. Please state your name for the record. Do we have a PowerPoint presentation?
Yeah, but I didn't know.
You want your seat? You can have mine.
Thank you, though. I'm Lynn Beatty, and I'll wait until Helen gives out the packets for those.
I have another one. It's now yours.
Okay.
You got it.
Same thing.
All the ones that we got go on this all.
Just so you know, it is the same.
Oh, thank you.
Diversity.
I have one.
I've got one.
Tim.
Thank you.
Tim. So this is yours?
Good afternoon. I'm the Chief Human Resources Officer for Newcastle County. Thank you once again for allowing me the opportunity to highlight information contained in the 2011 Workforce Diversity Report, as well as noting a few observations since last year. Joining me today are members of the Human Resources Leadership Team, Latanya Ashley, Employee Relations Specialist, Tammy Martin, Pension and Benefits Administrator, Helen McKinley, Human Resources Administrator, Elizabeth Petrick, Human Resources Administrator and responsible for Newcastle County Training, and Kelly Tomczak, Human Resources Administrator, and she's also located at Special Services. As you may recall, last year, I presented a report that contained 3 years' worth of data. During my presentation, I indicated it was my hope to present this report on an annual basis. Hence, this year's report will reflect information from 2011. Included in this report is a snapshot of the county's workforce, broken out by various categories, a copy of the county's diversity policy statement, as well as endorsements by the county executive and this legislative branch. We also have detailed statistics along with a description of the county's efforts by department. And lastly, a detailed appendix containing supplementary information. Most of the data presented motivating the bullet is presented as of December 31st, 2011, unless otherwise noted. The report in its entirety will be posted as was the case last year on the Newcastle County website under the Human Resources page upon completion of this meeting or early in the morning. Before I walk you through the report highlighting some of the areas, let me share with you a couple of updates and observations. First, let me speak a little bit about training. Upon my arrival last year, I received much feedback regarding the last diversity training undertaken in 2010. I also reviewed the report submitted by the contractor. To that end, and after an internal discussion with my staff, I decided to move forward with developing an in-house training module focusing on respect. Whether we like it or not, sending someone to diversity training is not always well received. I think part of the reason for that is just the mere labeling of the training course. Instead, I believe what we need is recognition and appreciation for one another, valuing and utilizing the unique talents and contributions of all in a respectful manner. If we accomplish this and keep this mindset in the forefront, we should make great strides in our countywide diversity efforts. To that end, Liz Petrick, our training administrator, has been working on such a course for the county. It will be a combination of modules from HMS, which is a consulting firm that we use, that specializes in work-life issues as well as employee assistance, as well as case studies based on generic county examples, which will, I hope, foster interactive learning amongst our employees and dialogue. We hope to pilot this course in the first quarter of fiscal year 13. Lastly, I'd like to thank Councilman Smiley, who also put me in touch with someone who offers diversity training, and this might be a resource for the county for future initiatives. Turning to the Employee Diversity Leadership Group, which was mentioned last year, for those of you who may not be aware of it, this is an employee-based group which started under the then-county executive Chris Coons, and the purpose was to assist in creating an environment of inclusion within Newcastle County government through leadership, strategic direction, and administrative oversight. Not long after its beginning, however, the EDLG succumbed to transition issues, as then County Executive Coons began to run for office. Subsequently, he didn't have strong leadership to take over the initiative during the election cycle. Since last fall, I met with a couple of members of the Employee Diversity Leadership Group to discuss their observations and interest in resurrecting the group and getting it, you know, back on track. Now, quite frankly, not everyone responded to my call to chat. My confidential assistant sent out many emails, we played several calls, and there was some interest, no interest, etc. But I do think that this is something worth pursuing, and I have shared my thoughts with the Diversity Commission as well, which I'll get to the Diversity Commission in a little bit. We may have to solicit new members, which is fine. I don't see that as a concern. And we have a couple of the former members willing to come on board and help us jumpstart this. I look forward to having my first meeting with the resurrected EDLG in June. Let me talk a little bit about the Diversity Commission, which technically meets once a month. They met 8 times since my last report here before this body. I attended 6 of those 8 meetings, missing only 2 because I had scheduling conflicts. Currently on the commission, there are 2 vacancies. The chair's position has been vacant since October of 2011, and there's 1 council appointee which has been vacant since November 2010. As there are also a couple of new members on the commission decided to revisit their charter and just familiarize themselves again with what they're supposed to be about. They're in the process of establishing a list of meaningful deliverables for which they can act upon. Additionally, the Office of Human Resources requested assistance from the Diversity Commission on obtaining panelists for our interview panels. We've been having trouble getting a diverse panelist certain areas for our interview processes, and so we utilize them as a resource, and we will utilize them in the future as well. Last December, County Executive Clark attended the Diversity Commission meeting, and he re-emphasized his commitment to and support of the county's diversity efforts, as well as his support to the commission. He welcomed feedback from the commission and encouraged anyone to submit ideas that would help foster diversity. County Executive Clark stressed strongly that the Diversity Commission is one such body that can provide ideas to help us foster diversity. I'm turning my attention to the selection interview process in county government. Now, the Office of Human Resources, and I am personally committed to diversity as it pertains to our oral boards and our selection interview processes. I'm personally committed to making a good faith effort to ensure that each panel that we convene has a diverse slate of qualified applicants, as well as a diverse interview panel. I have personally served on interview panels and special services, and more recently, well, actually special services and public safety, and just, I guess, what, Monday? Special services again, and I will continue to do so. This is a good opportunity for me to see the process up close and personal, to familiarize myself more so with those who are on the hiring teams and the panels, and actually the work that is being done in the county other than seeing it on a piece of paper. So it's been very beneficial, and I will continue to avail myself of such in the future. And just general dialogue, I've had the opportunity to engage in very candid discussions on a variety of issues at a variety of times of day with the management of Newcastle County government. But I'd like to just note in particular, I'm very appreciative of the dialogue I've had with Colonel Scott McLaren, Ed Nowicki, shout out Ed, Marcus Henry and Wayne Merritt on various issues that came up in their respective departments over this past year. They have always been and continue to be receptive of my advice. Sometimes they don't want to take it, but they end up doing it. And my guidance as well, which makes my job really a lot easier. Now, let me just step through a couple of items in the report itself, which I'm sure you've had a chance to kind of peruse. Let me just flip over to page 3. You'll see that we employed 1,393 employees full-time, just down slightly from 2010. With 86% belonging to 6 different unions, and we also employed 411 part-time and seasonal employees, including 137 crossing guards. Looking at page 4, you'll see that of the full-time staff, 63% are male, 37% are female. Part-time staff, females make up 73% of the staff, and males 26%. Flipping to 5, persons of color comprise obviously a smaller percentage of the workforce as the diagram reflects, 17.52% for full-time employees and 24% for part-time employees. This slightly higher percentage of person of color for as compared to last year with regard to part-time employees. Pages 7, 8, and 9 are pretty much unchanged. They are displaying various statements and commitments from both branches of government. If you look at page 10, I'd just like to highlight a couple of initiatives in place. First, we expanded our recruitment and outreach attempts to include alumni from alumni associations from historically black colleges and universities. As well as fraternal and professional organizations, Black League organizations. There's a network out there that's been very helpful to us. As previously mentioned, we're reestablishing the Employee Development Leadership Group, and including having them meet with the Diversity Commission so we can have some dialogue between both groups at the, I believe, the February meeting. We did have one member of the EDLG to actually attend the Diversity Commission meeting. We in HR have established a new supervisory training course, and we've had 82 employees to go through that. It includes components of leadership awareness, performance evaluations, discipline, harassment, and FMLA. And then, of course, as I previously mentioned, we're going to pilot the respect course, and then it will ultimately become a part of our mandatory training curriculum. If you flip over to pages 11 and 12, you'll see data from the 2000 census with extremely limited data from the 2010 census. We're still waiting, although it's been a year and a half. Almost, you know, we are waiting for the results from the Fed. So just when we get it, we will pass it along. Information on pages 13 and 14 reflects historical data. for full and part-time employees from 2002 until 2011. And then information on pages 15 through 16 reflects a summary of our new hires, promotions, and reclasses. If you want to take a look at the department updates, they are on pages 17 through 25. And our departments address diversity and challenges every day in a variety of ways. And you can see some of those listed on those pages as noted. Now, as I mentioned at the beginning of my remarks, the last section of the report, which is the appendix, contains additional detailed information which may be of interest to you, and I won't go into that at this point. As I shared with you last year, that my role as Chief Human Resources Officer is to ensure that we continue to address challenges facing our diversity efforts and provide support to the departments, and try to help make our diversity efforts become an integral part of our daily work endeavors. I thank you for allowing me this opportunity to present this report, and I will try to address your questions at this time.
Thank you, Ms. Beattie. Members of council have questions, comments? Councilman Hollins?
Thank you, Mr. President. Just a comment, really. It just seems to me from looking at the data, we're pretty stagnant. At best, we move a little to the left, a little to the right year after year, but I don't see any real progress that has been made in Newcastle County in terms of diversity. And I think the departments, when you read what they print, it reads very well. But beyond that, I don't know if there's any action to really support what they print. But the Department of Special Services in particular, it says continue to support purchasing's efforts to reach out to minority and women-owned businesses. And from the meeting we had earlier with the spend analysis, there was no indication of that whatsoever. Seems to me it was just the opposite. And as I said in the previous meeting, year after year after year, we hear the same thing, from purchasing. Well, that's an issue with special services. We need to change the legislation. We see here purchasing saying continue to support. So it's just a lot of words, like a lot of fluff, feel good, sounds good. But quite frankly, the numbers just don't show anything that's really moving that anyone can point to and say, well, this is really a success. And I said at the earlier meeting, I'm kind of sick and tired of hearing that, we need to change the legislation and it's all on purchasing or all on special services, rather, and special services seem to have no interest in doing what they're saying. So it's just my personal observation. I just don't see any real movement here at all in this government.
I can't speak to purchasing and procurement. I was here for that presentation, but I can speak to the selection interview process, which falls under the purview of human resources. We've done limited hiring and been sitting on the panels at special services. I think there is an effort to move them along the path of becoming more diversified. They have not fought any attempt to have a diverse panel. They have gone above and beyond cutoffs for testing purposes so that there can be more inclusiveness. They have painstakingly taken additional time to obtain additional information when applications are submitted and they are not conclusive. They'll send a letter out to get some more information so that we can have an appropriate pool of diverse applicants, which also has a downside, because when you do that, it lengthens the process. But, it's a juggling effect. So we're trying to, make some changes, at least in the selection interview hiring process, to help staffing. So that much I have seen up close and personal. Now, I'll be the first to say that from last year to this year, you're not going to see a whole sea of change. But it's with each little thing that we do that hopefully in a year or two, as more positions open up, you'll see more reflection of what you're looking for, at least from the hiring HR standpoint.
Sure, and I appreciate that. And I saw the numbers, how many people you've hired since 08, 09, 10, and so forth.
Yeah.
And that's what I was referring to. Those numbers are not that great, but I think if you were to look at the number of minorities, there was probably a greater percentage last year than it was this year.
Right.
But my point with Department of Special Services is more to their outreach to, because they control so much of the contractual work.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of their percentages of minorities, they're probably in the ballpark with everything else, really. They're at 14, 16%. But when they say here, continue to support purchasing efforts to reach out to minority and women-owned businesses, this means beyond the people that work in special services. This implies that they're actually going to diversify the millions or tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars that are spent in that department, and that's not reflected when you look at the spend analysis. So that's my primary criticism, to see this and realize in the other data that we receive, it's just not true.
Now that Tom's at,
to take that back to Wayne
Merritt
for further discussion.
Yes, I have that
written down.
Thank you.
Back to
any other questions, comments,
Ms. Beating? Councilor Street? I made all kinds of noise and got upset yesterday in regard to the absence of African-American paramedics. And everybody told me to hold off today that there was going to be some magic that you were going to bring forward to make it.
Is that what was said?
But they told me to wait until today that to hear your report and presentation, and I'm expecting magic because essentially I was told to wait. Good things come. So I just want to know those good things are.
I don't know if I'm going to be able to wave a magic wand for the Department of Public Safety or the EMS division. I will say this, looking at statistics from where the county stands relative to where the nation stands, we're tracking a little bit behind, but the pool of applicants are very small. It's very difficult to reach persons of color to get them interested in this area. I know that we have one employee who's in school right now that we're paying for, and hopefully we'll stick on board. We'll have to stay on board for a period of time. And I also know, and that person should be graduating sometime this year. I do know that we have another individual who is already graduating. We did not pay for that education, but is a viable part of the force, and these are both persons of color. I know that EMS has done some outreach through Howard Votech and some of the other schools. There's probably some other things we can do with the standpoint of maybe interacting a little bit more with the faith community and being more available in the high schools, because I think you have to start young there to get persons of color and the community interested in the in a field that they ordinarily would not be exposed to. And I know you've probably been hearing this a while. I remember last year you told me I wish you well, but we're doing the best we can to bring that awareness to the community, and we're working with Chief Chan and Mrs. Kruby. They've got a very difficult job, but we're aware of the situation and we're continuing to work with them on that. I don't know if that's the magic words you were looking
as usual, very eloquent, politically correct statement. And I understand, I looked at this, we got two in the oven. And that's sure. Progress if they ever get out of the oven. But we've had folks finish school and end up flunking out, testing out, or whatever in the field. So I don't trust them. I don't trust the process. And beyond your very eloquent, very politically correct presentation, what I feel like I'm being told across the board is it ain't gonna happen throwing the towel.
Well, I'm sorry you feel that way. That's not how I feel. I will continue, to work with EMS and public safety as well as the rest of the county to put forth the best efforts. If there are ideas that the council has that they want to present to me, I'm all ears. We're doing the best we can, and we're working very hard. We recognize the challenge. We've made some improvement. It's probably not where you want it to be, and it probably isn't going to be where you want it to be next year. But we're going to continue to persevere. And this is me. Maybe I'm eloquent. I don't think I am. But this is just the way I deliver, because this is what I feel.
well, I'm not going to let you stand there and take all the heat, or take any heat from me whatsoever for a problem that was in existence prior to you coming, prior to me being in office, et cetera, et cetera. My only point is, change takes commitment, and it takes strong-willed leadership, and there may be different opinions, but I don't think that the primary commitment, the primary leadership, if it's going to be successful, it's going to come from HR. I think it's going to have to come from the department itself. And same thing yesterday. I just don't see it. And I'm not going to throw in the towel. I'm going to keep on doing everything I can think of. By the same token, I'm open to ideas too. I mean, I don't have a monopoly on ideas, and whatever I can do or whatever someone could suggest that this council do differently above and beyond, I'm certainly open to. I'm just not giving up. And I know, you know, when I went to the center that I'm running now, and it was 100% African-American community. And because of some violence in the community, I knew in order for those kids to grow up not hating each other, they would have to grow up together. So I made a conscious effort to diversify my agency, and I did that primarily and foremost by putting an Hispanic person on my front line to say we're open, Well, now it's about 50-50. But that was commitment on my part. It was commitment on the part of the board of directors, and caused some grief and criticism from it. But if you want to lead, you have to lead. So I'm looking for the commitment, and I'm looking for going above and beyond. And again, I don't think the primary burden should be on your shoulders or within your department.
And I do appreciate that, and I recognize that there's not much, you know, I personally can do about the past. All I can do is focus on the now and the future, and quite honestly, you know, I now own this because I'm now part of the process, and so all I can do is try to do something to improve upon the process, and that's what I'm trying to do.
Councilman Cartier?
Here's an idea that I'll continue to press as long as I feel there's a need, you know, in terms of applicant pools. We have a vast number of veterans that are going to be demobilized out of the United States military as we wind down these, you know, commitments overseas and, you know, these wars wind down. You know, the police department expressed change of policy where they would take, you know, veterans coming out at like the staff sergeant level. I think there is an opportunity on the EMS level to recognize the expertise of battlefield medics, people coming out of the Army have medical experience. There is some way of integrating their training and maybe giving additional training so we have a whole nother applicant pool of willing, already very well trained people that we can draw on. Hopefully it'll also encourage more diverse applicants out of that pool. So I put that out to the MS Chief Tan, and you know, I'll continue to just say that we have an opportunity now, that there are many people, including the President of the United States, for on and down saying to us, you know, local government, hire these veterans coming back. If you have any opportunities, hire these people. They're going to do a great job for you. So I'm just going to continue to put that out as an idea, because I think the EMS division has an opportunity coming on in right now.
And that's an excellent point. I believe we are going to be participating in a job fair specifically for the military. I don't think that has come up yet, but that's on the docket for us.
Thank you.
Any other questions, comments, members of council? Yep. Councilman Bell?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, and Jay and I on a regular basis talk about public safety and review over what's going on in public safety, and I think it's very clear when you look at the different segments of public safety and you take a look at some of the initiatives that the police are doing as far as you know, videos and of course job fairs and everything else, but they actually include diversity in their marketing strategy, and so that you know, folks understand that it is clearly open to everyone, okay? I'm looking at communications. It says the selection boards are made up of diverse panels that include both internal and external members that reflect the applicant pool. Just seems to me that maybe there's something to be said about what emergency communications and the police are doing.
They're doing the same thing. They just didn't list it here, but they are
okay.
doing the same thing.
Well, I'm reading what I'm reading.
Yeah, I understand.
And I guess the other question, and I brought it up yesterday, is I think that from the standpoint of the Delaware Technical and Community College, we had former Colonel Simpson come in and speak, and they have classes of folks that pay for their own education. They have an interest. They go there. And I don't buy the thing that all of them are going to Kent and Sussex. I think that we should be, just like any other employer, should be trying to market why they should be here in New Castle County. Delaware is not that big of a state. Folks living in Kent County can certainly drive to New Castle County and everything. And I'm looking that, I mean, one paramedic candidate, African-American female, was recruited from the Delaware Technical and Community College paramedic class 2010-2011. So it shows that they're able to somehow include diversity in the training classes, and I think that we should reach out and try to bring folks on board. The African American male that's here from 11-12, it says that he's a county employee. We actually hired him.
Yes,
and he's in training.
That's correct.
Okay. Another thing that comes up time and time again when we talk to folks is that out in the field is that the FTO part of the program, the field training operations, that it seems like folks get through their education and in some cases excel above and beyond others in their education piece, but then, and we've invested a great deal of money in them, but then when they get out into the field training operations, depending on who's with them and everything, is whether they make it or not make it. It just seems to me that we should be trying to do a better job of having some field training operations as part of the whole overall class, so that folks are, not everybody may be a paramedic, but I think that they'll be able to see what goes on the street, they'll be able to, you know, get some hands-on and some exposure. So maybe instead of field training operations being at the end, maybe, and I know they do ride-alongs, but possibly we could kind of take a look at the educational process of bringing folks into the field training part of it a little sooner, so that we're not only investing in formal education, but we're investing in the application of medicine on the street. And it just seems to me that we lose a lot of folks that graduate, and some of them, like I say, tremendously in their class, and then they can't make it as a paramedic. And I think if you look at those rates, you'll see that several folks depart from us because they don't qualify in that FTO program. And either we're not doing it totally correct, and I'm not faulting anybody, but at the same time, is it consistent?
Well, and I was going to go right there with you. There has been a challenge with the consistency in training. I guess maybe a couple of weeks ago, Human Resources met with Local 3911. We've been doing a series of summits, and that issue came up. Chief Tan was there, Director Colonel McLaren was there, as well as representatives from HR, Kenny Dunn, and a few others, and we talked about that. Actually, there was a change in the training curriculum so that we could standardize some of the training, and that occurred about a year and a half ago. It was just before I came on board, and we're starting to see the improvements based on that standardization, so you'll probably see a little bit more retention coming downstream.
Okay.
So we have had dialogue on that.
Thank you.
Councilwoman Kilpatrick, Councilwoman
Powers. Thank you. I think that we have kind of two areas that we're looking at here. I think we're looking maybe at general population and what the diversity is within that general work population, and then we're looking at public safety. I would think that from a personal standpoint, looking at public safety and the national certification that goes into something like your EMS group, it is a little bit different than the general population. And I guess what I haven't seen is the number of applicants, total applicants, and what those diverse numbers are within that total, and then it broken down into how many are hired and what the breakdown is in diversity within that hiring.
Within the public safety area?
Within the general, which is overall.
We can pull something together for you. Again, that is voluntary, so some of the data will be skewed because not everyone has to complete demographic information. Sometimes, well, oftentimes, we get unknown, but we can pull something together and get that to council.
I mean, and maybe that would give us an idea of whether the recruiting is going to the right, the recruiters are going to the right places, so that it's well known that there are job openings. That, and you know, I mean, when it comes to EMS, I can't imagine who wants to be a paramedic. You know, I mean, those are things that you have to be a very special person in order to do that. It's not whether you can pass the test or get hired. It's, do you want to do that every day? I mean, I look at some of the fire companies, and maybe we need to have more kids that go in and do ride-alongs with fire companies, which go out to accident sites. You know, some of the 16-year-olds that do volunteerism at the fire companies, those are the ones that we tend to see make it, because they know what's there. If you don't know what's there, what you're putting yourself into, and you try to recruit somebody to become a paramedic, and they've never been there before.
Or been exposed to
it. What a rude awakening when you get to the end of that process and it's like, oh my gosh, I can't do this. I think you have to know that those people can do that job. I mean, not everybody can be a nurse. Not everybody can be a paramedic. So there's exposures that some people just can't handle.
Councilman Powers?
Somewhat on top of what has been said, and really with what Chief Tan said yesterday, I have a girl, and she's of color, that lives in my district, keep asking. She's been a year now in the program at Deltec. You know, is Newcastle County hiring? Are you what he said, which really upset me, and I kind of let it go, is the times he finds out is when they're riding along with them. Now, part of that class is going to also ride along with Kent County and Sussex County. So what are we losing people because we only look at the ones that are riding along with our people and saying they're no good or they're good? But I think the recruitment needs to start with the class that's going on right now. It's a 2-year class. So she's halfway through. We haven't even talked to her, except myself. But I don't see it at all. I mean, she's been a constituent of both of ours because she lives on one side or the other.
She'd make an excellent paramedic.
Councilwoman Dillon?
I think part of this issue is that Deltec is really in control of the training. And part of the issue that I see is that, and this is something that Ms. Beattie has no control over, is that in Delaware, you know, this is a full-time program for 2 years. And if you look at some of the community colleges' curricula in Maryland, they have part-time EMT training. They have weekend classes, and it's a whole different way of delivering the training. And the problem is that if you're asking people, I know that the difference in students and diversity from when I teach at the University of Delaware to Wilmington University is just really quite amazing. And part of that is the different formats that they deliver courses. And we don't have that diversity of format delivery in the same way here. And that's part of the issue. You're asking somebody to commit 2 years of full-time study to get to that, you know, to the point where they're doing the ride-alongs, you know, or they're doing their field training. So we have this system that really works against people who might be considering doing this, being able to take classes on a part-time basis to see if it's for them. I think we have a problem with the educational structure as much as we have, which works against recruitment for diversity.
Any other questions, comments from Ms. Beating? Councilman Street?
I would just appreciate if you would think about some suggestions you may make to the department for the two finish and how they're going to be acclimated. And it's, I'm trying to tell my life story, but I was among the first black tellers in the racetrack circuit.
I know.
And, you know, I went in at 18. And I'm just, well, I mean, I was told because of all the work that had been done to get me there, I better not quit and I better not get fired. By the same token, I had mentors, I had somebody to go to, and if they hadn't been there, I'd have probably quit the first week. So just think about in a way and a process by which folks are going to be acclimated and set up some resources for communication, because entering into that situation, entering into a situation where you're an outstanding minority is not a sure track.
Councilman Powers?
I'm just, partly there was also this girl, there's a boy working for me that's finishing up his first year. We're not communicating to him. And I think what Simpson coming was trying to bridge that gap with some of these students. And I know the boy that's working for me is now thinking of going into something else. Now, he's been in the fire department. He's number at Middletown. He was number 8 on calls. On response.
Got awarded at the banquet.
Yep. I mean, we're losing somebody because he's thinking, am I, for all this biology and stuff, am I going to get a job? And I can tell you right now, nobody's talked to him because he talks to me every day. So if you want to keep losing them, don't do anything.
Questions, comments, members of council? Members of the public?
The only thing, if I may, the only thing I will say, Councilman Powers, is that when you have constituents calling you, you can definitely direct them to either Chief Tan or someone in the Office of Human Resources.
We've been saying this for 4 years to him, and he's not listening. So maybe he's changed in the past year, a couple weeks.
I'm losing you. Who's not listening?
We've been saying that he needs to get up with these kids at Del Tech for the past 4 years. And especially when Simpson came, it kind of helped to say it even more. But I don't know what the separation, what he wants. But, I mean, we watch these kids get, you know, for outstanding EMTs. I mean, these are 18, 19-year-old kids that are really dedicated and understanding. You're not going to have them quit. They've seen blood. But nobody's out there, as he said, mentoring them or encouraging them that there might be a job. It's a lot. It's a hard thing to go through.
Well, I wouldn't, you know, suggest that at least with this one particular person that you're talking about, if you would provide me with this name, because I would like to do some follow-up and have some dialogue. So if you
I've got a couple of them. So.
Well, if you would send that to me, that would be most beneficial.
Thank you, Ms. Beattie. Appreciate your time. Any other comments from members of the public? Seeing none, thank you for your presentation.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. All right, moving on. Agenda item number 5, Council Handbook Update. These updates, I believe, were circulated before the meeting. There are two different subjects of these amendments. One is vacation policy, page 16 and 17, under section 6.6. And this is to make the section consistent with the HR department. And the second issue is changes to section 3.9 from page 7 and 8 on our harassment policy. Anybody want to make a presentation on the suggested changes? Okay. Anybody have any questions, comments on these suggestions, changes, proposals? Any member of the public, Councilman Cartier?
We're going to add a whole new section, or we're going to, what are the proposed changes? Just like that we have a review of that.
Oh, sure. You mean in section 6.6 or section
3.9? 3.9, correct?
Yeah, 3.9. It's amended. Did you get the black line or the red line as the gate fence?
Yellow. I don't have one with anything highlighted in it.
Oh.
I have one question.
Thank you. All right.
In the meet, well, Councilman Cardi is reviewing that. Councilwoman Kilpatrick.
And I don't see it in this, but I thought what I had read in an email version was that we were taking out the written statement. Is that correct? Is it just taken out, or am I?
It's just taken out.
So it's not showing here that it's being taken out.
Correct.
I don't know that I like that. I mean, I think it's either something's got to be either written or recorded. Otherwise, how do you go back and, you know, he said, she said?
I'm sorry, and for the record, what has been taken out? What are we...
That it has to be a written complaint.
A written complaint.
Isn't that what's taken out? Is that what I'm remembering?
What's the... if somebody could speak to the rationale on removing the written complaint.
Carol Dolan, Council to Council. The written requirement is considered to be, according to personnel experts in a lot of different areas, to be chilling, and that someone may not come forward. There has to be a written record, obviously. If you're the person receiving the complaint, you have to make note of the record. If you're the complainant, of course, you would have to do it. But our State Whistleblower Act, for example, permits an oral report. The executive policy under the air harassment policy permits an oral report. Our county whistleblower policy permits an oral report. So for the written requirement is somewhat unique to council.
I guess I just you know how just conversations get misinterpreted sometimes, and I guess I have a problem thinking that what am I missing here? I mean, if I come to you and tell you something, are you then at some point going to write it down and have me sign that was the complaint? Or, I mean, something's got to be written.
Carol Dolan, Council to Council, and I'll certainly defer to the clerk as well. Certainly a record has to be made of any complaint or any concern that is brought to you as the recipient of the concern, the same under the Whistleblower Act, the same under any act. And if you were the complainant, you would also make a record of that. So that doesn't negate the requirement that there be a writing. What it does negate is the requirement that there be an actual written report. In the whistleblower statute, if someone comes forward to the Attorney General's office and says we're misusing funds, they're permitted to do that without putting it in a written complaint. The perception is that it does have a chilling effect on individuals who wish perhaps to more informally talk to somebody and maybe don't want to follow that with a written complaint. And I will defer to the clerk.
Betsy Gardner, clerk of council. I was just going to say, as the person that has to investigate it, if you come to me with a complaint, you would make your oral complaint. I would take notes and have you sign whatever I took from you.
Okay, so
complaint.
It's just not being written in a formal,
right.
But there was exactly. Something written that says, yes, this is what
down.
I said to yeah. you, and I'm now initialing it to verify
exactly.
that you heard it
I
as
have
I
to
told
do that
you.
Because
okay.
To make record of it.
Okay.
And
all right.
Sign it that that's what you said.
Okay.
And for purposes of clarity, I understand that these proposed handbook changes have been circulated less than 7 days before this meeting. So I won't feel more comfortable making sure that we've had notice, make sure we have the notice of the 7 days. And if we need any further clarification, like the blacklining or the scratch for council, I would feel more comfortable with if we had the blacklining showing what we removed as well.
Betsy Gardner, clerk of council, the vacation policy does show underlining the notice.
Okay, great.
And I think what we got an email must have, right? Because I remember that. Did the email have
it? It wasn't.
Or am I just, it was what?
It wasn't, I don't think it's all council.
Okay.
And this kind of also dovetails into our next discussion. I'll call Council Medilla before we get there. Concerning personnel committee and our staffing subcommittee. But any other questions, comments on either the vacation policy change or the proposed harassment policy change? Council Medilla?
I'm fine.
Councilman Street?
I'm going to admit to you, I just looked at this, but I don't like this so-called harassment policy at all. And it leaves a door, I think it's advantageous to the person making the complaint, but I think it's dangerous for the person that's being the complaint's being lodged again. Number one, legally constitutional, the lawyer's in the room, but I have a right to a fair and impartial hearing officer. Now, if you're going to have the person that's taking the complaint do the investigation, I'm not so sure, having already received one side of the information, that person can be impartial. Second, at what point does this become serious enough to say, well, wait a minute, you're entitled to representation? And three, to receive any and all information and cross-examine any and all witnesses. I mean, if you're going down this road, you either go down it correctly or you don't go at all. And I think it's a heck of a situation to put the clerk in, because now you're putting her in a position of being investigator, judge, and maybe jury.
Councilman, I understand your concerns, and I think, you know, having talked to the clerk about some of this, I mean, part of the purpose of for the impartiality is to have a neutral, you know, non-council member conduct an initial investigation of the matter to see whether it even warrants reporting to, you know, the personnel committee for a more complete investigation. So I don't think any. To my knowledge, if I'm correct, there wouldn't be any action taken by the clerk or required by the clerk in and of itself.
At the point where whatever she does, whatever she commences, whatever she does, that's the initial point of the record in the matter. Okay, so going down the road, anything that happens can and will be held against you in the court of law. So, you either start it right, and you're asking her to do something I think is far outside the scope of what she's hired to do. When you're in an investigation process, you have somebody that's experienced and eminently qualified to do that, and cannot be perceived in any way, shape, form, or fashion to be partial to either the complainant or the person who is being, well, I don't know what the word is.
The
accused. Thank you.
Keep it simple.
Would the clerk like to speak at this point in time?
That's what I mean.
We're talking about when Betsy Gardner, clerk of council. I am considered the HR component of this office, so it would be me that would have to be the one to investigate it. I don't know how else we would handle such a complaint. Carol, if you have any comments on that. I don't know that it would be appropriate any other way. As the HR component, it's the clerk's office that would have to receive the complaint and at least investigate it, get some kind of information on it, make some determination to send it on to the council president and council and let you decide at that point. But it would have to be the clerk's office as the HR part, component of the office, to begin the investigation.
we should just keep him as person.
Council to council?
Carol Doolin, council to council. Just to make a point, this does mirror the executive policy and, in fact, some of the procedures for the investigation were taken out of that policy because we didn't have any. Also, there is a requirement, whether we want to put it in writing or not, under Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 that prohibits certain conduct that would have to be investigated regardless of whether you decide to put it in a policy.
Let me ask, Councilman Street?
None of which negates anything I just said. Doesn't change a thing about what I just said.
Well, again, if there are proposals or counter-proposals to this rule or to the harassment policy, we'd certainly welcome suggestions or circulating those proposed changes before our discussion and our vote on these handbook changes. I'm sorry, Councilman Cartier?
Yeah, it's a very practical matter. If someone has a complaint, there has to be someone to take the complaint. Clerk of council or... You know, we're going to get into this other issue here with the personnel committee. Someone has to be able to receive a complaint. I think it's up to, you know, council as to, you know, whether we need to bring in somebody independent to continue an investigation or so forth. But, you know, it's a practical matter of who's going to receive a complaint if someone has a complaint. Can't have an organization where people can't go to someone to complain if they feel they got a problem. Can't, that doesn't work either.
Councilwoman Dillon?
I was just going to say, to follow up on Councilman Cartier's point, that this seems to me, as we talk about this, this really is tied to the concept of a personnel committee. If Betsy is the one to receive the complaint, certainly then the personnel committee would be one to take up the complaint and to continue the investigation. So if you have a personnel committee, you've got right here, I know I keep pointing to you, okay, sorry about that, but I mean, this does provide a vehicle of a separation between the person who initially takes it and then and does an initial investigation and then whoever, I'll point to Dave just to make you feel better, Tim and Janet, whoever would investigate it's then two separate entities looking at the issue.
Right. And you keep saying personnel committee. The other option looking at, I mean, right now I think there's a staffing subcommittee. You know, is that the appropriate outlet for staffing concerns or, you know, harassment complaints and so on? Or is that the best form or the best outlet for the clerk then to take that report and to take it to that, you know, staffing subcommittee before it even reaches the personnel committee? Did you have your hand up, Jan? Did Councilwoman Kilpatrick?
No.
Okay. Councilman Cartier?
A little bit of history, Mr. Council President. Preceded you, your tenure here, but, you know, starting back in 2004, we had a separate personnel committee, and it functioned very well. In fact, it handled some pretty serious matters here very fairly and expeditiously, and it dealt with some problems. So I've been chafing under this arrangement. I fully believe, and I'm kind of leaping forward, but I fully believe that having a separate personnel committee is a necessity when we have a council staff and all the members of council and all the people in this organization, this branch of government, you know, that functions regularly addressing the personnel issue. It's not fair to pile it on the clerk. I agree with that. I think, you know, we need to, you know, have that existing for the purposes of personnel issues. We had it in the past. It functioned, I can tell you, very, very well for this body. So that's my point of view.
Any other specific discussion on any of these proposals?
I'll do my hand up.
Oh. Councilwoman Kilpatrick, do you really have your hand up this time?
I really have it up this time. Do you think that before we discuss this further, we could get a full copy with the line out so that we know what it was, what it's coming out, and what it's going to, that everybody can see?
Just for the record, Colin Shin, deputy clerk, the only words removed were in writing. But I will put out a new version before I leave today.
Okay.
Thank you. And then I would ask if there's anyone with issues, concerns, that we bring those out so we can discuss them and vote on this implementation of this harassment policy at our next meeting, you know, talking to folks in the office, you know, getting advice, getting counsel. We've been counseled as a body to make sure we take action on this as soon as possible. And I think that's wise counsel we should heed. Any other further discussion from the public? Seeing none, moving on to the next related issue, personnel committee discussion. And I'll turn that over. We've already gotten into some of that discussion, but Councilman Sheldon, are you the point person?
I guess I'm the point person. We had a subcommittee. Janet ran it. I listened to her. We basically came
as
up.
As usual.
As usual, she came up and said, if you want to be the chair, you're the chair. And I'll tell you what to do, as she did at the meeting. So all kidding aside, that's where we're at. So it was no, you know, as far as I'm concerned, because everybody looks at me, I did run they separated it. It's part of your job. It's in your job description. So you, well, everything is, I mean, that's just that, but it's, you are the chair. Okay. And I don't feel as though there should be a subcommittee. It should be a separate committee. Because a subcommittee meets, then we bring it on, and then it drags on. I do remember, and thanks, John, because, yeah, I was by myself. I didn't even have a co-chairman. And we had a couple, because we were a lot of new people here. And, you know, we had to rewrite the handbook. We had to redo some things, and we had some meetings. But I think a subcommittee is just going too long, too far, too many heads. And I think you either have a personnel committee separate, or you keep it, you know, you go ahead and chair it the way you see fit, either under this or under the personnel committee. But I personally, because my name's been thrown out there, and that's what I'm saying, to be the chair, I just don't think I could personally be a chair of a subcommittee to come to a personnel committee, and then it just drags on, and it gets too far gone, and then somebody disagrees to disagree, which is fine, but we've lost a month or more in just going through. So I do think there should be a separate committee, but if people are asking me, am I going to be a chair of a subcommittee, the answer is no. Well, I reluctantly take the personnel committee and being made to by Janet Kilpatrick, then I will. But that's my feelings on that. And some of that was joking, Janet. that's not true. But the feeling part of splitting it and having it separate is the way I feel as it should be done.
Thank you, Councilman Sheldon. Councilman Cartier, you mentioned this worked well before. Mm-hmm. What was the setup? What was the function? I mean, who was the chair?
We had a separate committee. Councilman Sheldon was the chair. We went adopted later as things went on. We went to co-chairing committees. I have no problem with that, but I do believe that, functionally speaking, this council needs a separate standalone personnel committee that will handle issues dealing with personnel. And no, it's no casting any aspersions on you, Mr. President. I just think it's a serious function and it should be handled by a standing committee. It did it in the past. It did us a great service, and I just think, you know, the way we have a lot of people here, and it's a fairness issue, and we're, you know, all due regard to the clerk of council, and the end of the day, it's a place where people have issues, personnel issues, can go to a standing committee and voice their concerns.
I appreciate that, council. Do we know why the personnel committee changed or devolved or no longer came to be in an active existence?
I think it was an initiative carried out by the previous council president and acceded to by council. I think it was a mistake. in hindsight, and I think that, you know, in all fairness to the people that work here, we need a standing personnel committee.
I appreciate that history. When I arrived, we didn't have an active standing personnel committee, and I assume there was some reason for that, or may have been some reason for that, but
mistaken reason.
Well, and we need to learn from, yeah, we need to learn from the from what has or hasn't worked in the past. Councilman Weiner?
Yes. I also think a separate personnel committee worked well, and it used to alternate with executive. They would talk and decide, you know, who needs to meet now, who's a priority, but it would be at that same time slot. So we've got a captive audience at that 4:30 time slot, rather than trying to get people here earlier at 1 o'clock or 11 o'clock. So that's what I would suggest.
And we've moved the executive at maximum to every other week. So
right.
If we wanted to put the personnel committee opposite that.
But personnel doesn't really need to meet that often. There may be a rash of personnel committee meetings during a personnel crisis, but there'll be times when there won't need to be a personnel meeting.
Councilman Sheldon?
Just food for thought. If I remember correctly, because I was there, is when it came up. There was a problem. That's the only time we met. We may have met once a month, once every 2 months, but we went a while there with nothing, and I think that's where somebody said, well, wait a minute, when was the last time you met? And it was, hey, we didn't have the problems, which was the best thing that happened for like 3 months. So I don't know, this was Paul's decision. It just group it together. Well, we haven't had no complaints, and we just grouped it together, so that was it. I think that's kind of how it got back. But I remember there for a while, Councilman Street said, I had to pick one. He says, just do it. Go away. What do you need? Do you need to have lunch with the people? And we did. We aired out. We were able to air out. It was under executive order, though. I will say that. There was committed to be able to go out. I think we had lunch or something, and we aired out some of these problems, and then we came back and started taking individual cases afterwards. So I think that's what it was, but I think we got to a point where we just didn't have something for 2 or 3 months, and then when you're having one, I said, well, I don't have nothing to discuss, which is that's what I want. And so you just merged it together.
This is the feedback we were looking for. This is when we kind of put this staffing subcommittee together, when there were staffing issues associated with legislation and givebacks and other things, there was a question of, do we need a personnel committee? So I appreciate the charge of both you and your guiding light, Councilwoman Kilpatrick, to come up with a recommendation. Now, did you all interview staff members as well?
No, we interviewed.
We interviewed each other.
that was basically it. That was, you know, I tried to say it nicely as possible. She's the first one I wanted to complain about punching. It didn't go too far.
Councilman Street?
Well, I think the personnel committee worked. I also think that its role and function, if there's never issue and you never meet, it should be available. I also think it has to be very inclusive, given the fact you've got 11 male council persons and at least 13 female employees. So, I mean, got to be inclusive as relates to gender, and the personnel committee has got to be real serious about their business, because heretofore, this sure enough hadn't been Vegas, because a whole lot of things came out that shouldn't have come out. And given some of the sensitive and very serious issues that did come up when they were thrust upon us, the personnel committee in some instances is going to have to operate like Vegas.
Any other comments from members of council? Councilor Warner.
Yes. Some of you don't recall, but council was greatly criticized for having a council dinner and going out. There were some good reasons why it was. you know, I think for inclusiveness and openness, I think that the meeting ought not to be at a lunch somewhere else, but we should simply alternate it with the exec committee meeting at the 4:30 time slot here.
Yeah, I didn't take that as you're a suggestion for the actual meetings. I thought that the resolution might be at lunches. That's what I thought.
I think he was just talking.
That's what
about
I thought
that.
I meant.
I thought when it came a person that came to talk within themselves.
Right,
it was that's what it was. It says under executive order, so and so had a complaint that was very personal, so they had to go off the record, and that's what that was about. I mean, no, it wasn't a lunch every time. I think we had one, maybe two tops, but it was about the particulars. There's a couple things that we had to get through that were actually in the paper at one time that we had to talk about first amongst ourselves. At the time the attorney and of course Holly and Betsy were involved. So that's what that came about. Don't think there was a bunch of grand lunches. No, there was a personnel committee that once we got the complaint that we talked about, that we brought it here. And of course we would have one, especially with the raises or deductions and stuff like that. I think everybody this past time thought we could have done other things. Everybody had a lot of opinions. That would be opened in the air after getting together. But no, that you can't have executive order on that.
All right. Any other questions, comments, members of council? Any questions from the public? Please state your name for the record.
Shanice Jackson. I would just like to state that if we have a complaint against Betsy or Holly, who are we supposed to go to then?
I think
I would imagine yes.
It would be the personnel person.
Well, okay. Yes, and or your own council person. Under the revised rules, I think it provides that you can also take the complaint to a member of council. So you can also take the complaint to your member of council, or if we constitute a personnel committee, then I would think the appropriate person would probably be the personnel committee.
Okay, so
you wouldn't have to report the problem to the person creating the problem.
That's great. Thank you so much.
That would never happen, but if it did. Any other question, comments, members of the public? Ms. Shin, please state your name for the record.
Holly Shin, Deputy Clerk. I just wanted to say I don't want to presume to speak on behalf of the staff because I haven't spoken to them. But I think a personnel committee is a good idea so that members of the staff feel like they do have some place where they can come and speak, you know, in a somewhat safe environment. And I think it's also a good idea because the clerk's office often needs to consult the personnel committee. So I just think, you know, that I agree with Councilman Sheldon and Councilman Street, I think, and Councilman Cartier that it did function well. And it would be a good idea to reestablish it.
Well, seeing no more comments, I'll say it would be my intention then to consider the adoption and propose chair or co-chairs of that committee during the next week. Please, I'll solicit comments off the record personally from members of staff. And then bring this committee, as I'm required to do as president, before the council for their for the blessing and adoption of a committee.
Mr. Council President, is there a reason why we would delay on the establishment of the committee? Is there a notice requirement that we're not going to?
It's something, again, that it would be, it's under the rules, if I believe I'm correct. I would have to set these out, and I would like to advertise that and put that out to public for comment. I mean, it says personal committee discussion, but I would prefer that we make sure that that's advertised, that I make those, okay. Put that out there, and then it would have to be voted on and approved. The council, the chairs of the committees have to be approved by council. So I'd like to propose that in advance of the meeting and then have that voted on at the meeting.
I think you lay out a good rationale, and I think that makes sense.
Any other questions, comments on this subject? Please.
Melanie Mammal, Legislative 8.
in July, I will have been with the, with council for 12 years, and just in my personal experience, I think staff and issues with staff worked better when there was a personnel committee. So.
Thank you. Please.
Carol Dolan, counsel to council. When I was council previous to the last administration, there was a personnel committee the entire time. And there is a reason, a legal reason, that employees need to have a place to go. That hopefully would permit resolving an issue short of an employee going out of this office to make a complaint and creating liability for the body. The other thing I wanted to say is we're required to give 1 week's notice, as we have on this agenda, of what we're discussing, and certainly I would defer to you, but I believe that the FOIA requirement was met with this agenda.
Any other questions, comments on this subject matter? Seeing none, thank you for the lively discussion and debate and all the input. Moving on, public comment. Any member of public wishing to comment? We don't have Councilman Smiley, you know.
I'll move to adjourn.
Anything under other?
Yeah.
Oh, other? Yep.
Oh.
Mr. President, we've had this issue for a while here. All the offices, I think, have seen it. I've had discussion with Council President Hollins about it in the past. I want to kick this kind of to you. We need to bring this to a resolution. When ordinances come over from the other side, they are proliferated with issues that our council attorney is picking up. I think our council attorney is spending way too much time on stuff like this. I mean, indentations, punctuations, you know, words and stuff. Is this important or is it important? And should it be coming over from the other side already fixed? I don't think our council attorney needs to be working on stuff like this back to our offices as it comes in. I mean, here's a prime example of something that came over we're going to be looking at tonight. This is unacceptable. If it is acceptable, then we need to move on about it. If not, but that has to stop. I just don't feel with having one attorney and on this floor, they should be spending time on stuff like this, on indentations and grammar and, you know, things like that. This is ridiculous. So we've got to figure out what's going on and the importance of it, how it's coming over, if it matters or doesn't matter, and let's move on with it.
I appreciate you bringing that up, Councilman Taggett. I know we had asked for advanced sending over of the of the proposed legislation. I think that's being met. So we appreciate that first step. But I guess if there are still issues associated with the product that's coming over, and we don't have sufficient time for proofreading. Maybe we need to discuss either additional time or maybe a process to send back legislation that has issues to the administration, or is there a proposed suggestion that would improve this process, Councilman?
I don't know if it's a legal opinion, but with it coming over, you know, with indentation issues and all that, is that important or isn't important at the process that we get it and we pass it? And if it's not, then we need to be moving on with it and not spending time, you know, with the council attorney on that. When I get legislation from our attorney, I would like to see things that say this is in conflict or this shouldn't be added, you know, things like that. Not that, you know, words aren't indexed properly and that kind of stuff. So it's just, it's very frustrating, you know, to see that. And if it is important or isn't important, I guess that's what we have to say. And if it is, it's got to be blocked. It shouldn't come over like that.
Okay. I see somebody with their hand up. Please.
Carol Dolan, counsel to council. This wasn't an issue that I raised, but I will tell you that the first assistant county attorney asked me for a template and said that she's going to have a meeting with everybody in the law department to work with them on that, and that just happened this week. As to whether or not it's important that you have consistent grammatically and correct legislation, certainly I think that it reflects on the body. Whether you have legislation that's consistent or not, at state legislative level, they have a 150-page manual that they will not accept the legislation unless it meets their dictates. So certainly if this body wants to have typos and every single piece of legislation different, that's something I could not spend my time on. But again, a lot of our leads indicated that they're
interested, and the template has been sent over several times, and the aides are making corrections. And certainly it does take a great deal of my time, but I do that on my own time a lot of times in the evening, so I'm not taking away from what the services I perform for this body.
Well, I mean, it sounds like if we have a path forward to have the legislation that comes over in a consistent template, I think that will probably be helpful. And then making sure, you know, if too many grammatical errors or typos are coming out of a particular department or a particular office, maybe we can address that on an office-by-office or department-by-department basis. Because, again, it may or may not be a problem for all legislation, or it might be an isolated incident, but I think you're right. I mean, I think we need to limit the burden on our solo council to as the last person reviewing that legislation to make sure that it does reflect positively on all of us at council, because the last thing we need is legislation going out that finalized and voting on that has errors or punctuation mistakes or grammatical mistakes. I mean, so thank you. Councilman Cardier?
You know, punctuation and grammar are important, but also dates. There are dates. There's pieces on that draft legislation.
Yeah, I looked at
the dates aren't on there.
You can't pass
so,
this.
You know, dates of legislation, dates of enactment, dates of, you know, got to have that as part of the piece.
All right. Well, I'm not sure if that has to do with a particular piece of legislation at issue. I mean, there's one piece of legislation at issue. But
I made a statement at the last meeting that the dates were changed on this substitute.
Okay. Any comment, looking at the other end of the room down there, any comment from our friends at the County Law Department?
Greg Wilson, County Attorney. Legislation comes from a lot of different places. Some of it originates here at Council, some originates in various departments. I don't see all the legislation that's come over. Worked with Council to Council. We have a template that we've circulated broadly, and will continue to circulate, but a lot of people's fingers get into legislation and things get changed. I'm not even sure what document you're talking about.
This is the comp plan. This came.
The comp plan. Well,
had to come out of you guys.
Well, it didn't come from me. So we'll, if you have, give me a copy of that, we'll follow up on that particular document as to prepare this. We'll continue to work at it. Certainly, we don't want any errors. If it's a semicolon, it's supposed to be a colon. That shouldn't happen, but it's not the end of the world.
I appreciate that, and appreciate your willingness to work with our council to make sure that, you know, things are flowing the way they should and arrive in a format. And yes, a lot of people touch a lot of different legislation, but sharing the format, certainly that will help in some regards. So thank you. Appreciate
We've also, I think, begun using track changes, which helps prevent the same mistake or comma from being reinserted.
Thank you. Thanks for bringing us to our attention. Councilman Tackett?
Well, I think possibly the formation of our personnel committee, whoever the author of the legislation is, if there is issues with it, we think we should have them come before the personnel committee to address them.
Wow. All right. Any other comments or good of the order? Any member of the public have any matter or other? Seeing none.
Motion.
Second.
Motion adjourned and second. All in favor?
Aye.
We will see you all in 45 minutes.
Man, look at all this.
Let me take this.
Are you a young man?
Take this back.